A rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
And welcome back to another episode of A Rich Tradition. Two guys, one love, and that is college football. I think that's how it starts. I'm Robbie Stumpole. I will be leading this tonight as Spencer is traveling the country with the Valdosta State Blazers calling games. I think for baseball now, or softball, one of the two. He is always busy. He is always famous. But tonight, I am so excited because I get to have a special co-host tonight. The man that I reference very much on this podcast at times because he has so much data that I don't understand how he does it. And that's the man, the myth, the legend, Graham Coffey. How are you, bud?
Thanks. Yeah, doing well, man. Glad to be here. That's probably the best introduction anyone's given me in my entire life. So I appreciate it. I'll have to make sure my wife listens to this episode. So
yeah, she should. She needs to understand. Like, my wife too. Like, I'll randomly at dinner one night. Like, and this is just where my brain works. Like, I'll pop. Like, I think it happened a few weeks ago. Actually, we were sitting down eating dinner as a family, me and her and little man. And I was like, you know what's funny, Lisa, is like, how Herm Edwards still has a job. And she was like, who the crap is Herm Edwards? And I was like, oh, he's the coach at Arizona State. He's got all this stuff going on. She's like, Robbie, you realize no one cares about that. And I was like, you know what? People do care. People listen to my podcast. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Thank you,
Grant. No, that's similar type thing that happens around our dinner table. So I'm glad to know that I'm not alone in the world.
No, you're not. And so anyway, we had to record today. The regular scheduled stuff that Spencer and I had planned for this week is going to get pushed back a couple of days. Hopefully him and I will get to record again maybe on Sunday or Monday. Today is Thursday, May 19th. But there was no way that I couldn't figure out, like, we had to record something today to get thoughts out because we had essentially the closest thing to WWE outside of the ring than I've probably ever seen, with two SEC coaches, both of which who are well-respected and have national titles under their belt, and especially also are supposed to be the adults in the room with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. So, Graham, like, just tell me what some of your thoughts were last night and leading into today.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the Saban comment that he made at the talk in Birmingham last night, an hour or two before I was going to bed. And, you know, I'm in a bunch of text threads and stuff with fellow college football fans, and it's pretty slow this time of year. And, like, all of a sudden last night, it was like, oop, pop, pop, pop. Everything's starting to go off. Everyone's like, wow, this is pretty aggressive, right? Like, yeah. Nick Saban is a pretty calculated guy, I think. And knows what he's doing, right? And so seeing him kind of throw the gauntlet down in this manner was pretty unexpected and felt like a little bit of a turning point in some of this NIL conversation, which I think we'll look back on this day and say, yeah, it was. But yeah, the immediate, you know, response, like Deion Sanders came out and tweeted something last night about, like, I'm going to have a response. I don't know if he has yet or not. I haven't seen it, but I knew that Jimbo wasn't going to let it lie, right? Because he had a response to an anonymous blogger named Slice Bread back on signing day. So it's like, if he's going to respond to that type of media, like, he's definitely going to respond to Nick Saban saying something out loud on film. And I didn't think it would be as scorched earth as what we got today. Oh. I jokingly tweeted out the old Dusty Rhodes Hard Times wrestling promo.
I loved it.
Because I was like, this is going to be Jimbo, you know, because Jimbo's he's a slick talker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up and he's good at playing kind of the underdog at Texas A&M, which plays great to that fan base because they kind of have that inferiority complex within their own state. And he's perfectly suited for them. But, man, it was a lot more intense than I expected. There was a lot more daggers thrown. It was a lot less professional than I expected it to be.
So let's just go ahead and get into some of the comments, and we can kind of react as we go through them. So first of all, Nick Saban last night, I guess at some rally, I don't know. Well, that rally is probably a bad word, but like a banquet or something last night, an event, he made this exact quote. And he was talking about specifically NIL. And I want to be clear about me saying that, like, because context matters in this conversation, mm-hmm. especially when we transition to Jimbo's reaction. So Nick Saban on NIL last night says, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player. So now, he didn't say that Jimbo did anything illegal. He didn't say that Jimbo, he implied it, right? Like, it's implied. I mean,
well, and I think especially because the NCAA has come out in the last couple of weeks and said, we're going to retroactively try to punish and prosecute and investigate schools who have used NIL as an enticement to get a player to come there. You know, NIL was not intended to be a recruiting tool. It was intended to be basically a reward for high-profile college athletes that were already established at programs. Obviously, that took a hard left turn the moment the cat got out of the bag. But I do think it's fair to say, you know, Saban knows the rules. Heck, he was just accused of tampering with the Louisville wide receiver by Scott Satterfield 6 days ago, right? So it's like he just kind of went through a situation like this. And he knows, you know, he knows that paying guys to come to school there is illegal. So I think it's fair to say, like, whether it was intentional to accuse them, I can't know, but I think it's fair to say he accused them of breaking rules.
No, and absolutely. I just wanted to say, like, the reason why I wanted to include that is because in a minute, like, I just want to point out how visceral Jimbo comes out in his response. But I do want to make note of this, and one of the reasons why, like, one of the contextual things that are being mentioned after Saban's comments was, like, from 2018 2021, Texas A&M only signed 5 5-star recruits. NIL was introduced last year, and they signed 7 in this 2022 class. Right. And look, so in a way, he's calling a spade, Nick Saban is. And like, the mistake, we don't have time to go down this part. I do think he made a mistake in bringing in Deion into this, because I think it was because he made a comment about Deion as well, paying $1 million to a player. I don't understand why you're even taking the time to mention that in this conversation. Right. And so I think Saban obviously made some mistakes in this call. And so last night, obviously, for like a good 12 hours, people were tweeting, commenting, blah, 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 blah. And then we get a message. I think it was about 8:30, 9 a.m. my time on the East Coast. Jimbo's got a press conference at 11 my time. And so I made sure that I was free and available. And I was on Twitter and I watched the presser. And then just, these are some of the highlights. We already responded to essentially what Nick Saban said, but like here's
I'll say before we get into the Jimbo part, because I know we're going to both have a lot of thoughts on what he said, but I don't disagree with Nick Saban's message.
Me neither.
I just think he's the wrong messenger.
Yes. It's like a rich person. It's like Leo DiCaprio telling me that I need to buy electric, you know, whenever it comes to a vehicle.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Yeah, bro. And I can't afford a Tesla. Sorry. I can't afford
it. Right. 100%. And I think at the same time, it's also along the lines of like, it's a conference rival, all of that. But I mean, at the end of the day, man, like, I'm sorry. I mean, I'll just say it. Like, we've known for years, people who are, I think, you know, kind of plugged in mm-hmm. this world have known for years that like Alabama has done plenty of things over the years to entice recruits to come and play at their school. Pre-NIL, there's a reason that, you know, every star player on their team was driving around and knew Dodge Challengers and Chargers and Mercedes and all of that. And look, I mean, like, that's kind of the status quo throughout many of the blue bloods in college football. They're not alone there. They're not unique there, but like, dude, you don't throw stones in a glass house. And it's just like, as soon as he said it, it did feel like, okay, I agree with him. I think this has gotten out of control. I think the sport needs to regulate this in a much more.
And it does, 100%.
Yeah. But he's not the guy to say this.
No, absolutely not. Yes.
And if he's going to say it, if he had said it and kept other programs out of his mouth while saying it, none of this would really be a story.
100%. And so then Jimbo comes on and he gets an opening remark. There are no questions at the beginning. And I'm just going to give you, let's just kind of go through some of these, because I'm going by Bretman Murphy's like little clips of what was said, okay? Because if we go by the whole thing, we'll be here 2 hours, because there was just so much that was said in his time. And I want to make sure before we get off here, though, that Jimbo did say something that puts him in a hole that I want to make talk about here in a minute, because I think he kind of screwed himself in a statement that he made. But let's go on. The first comment: it's despicable. We're taking shots at 17-year-old kids. We never bought anyone. When Saban doesn't get his way or things don't go his way, go dig into Saban's past. It's despicable. It's personal to us, and I know the guy really well. He then, to add on to that, he did say the comment, like, we view Saban as God. Well, let's look in God's past and see how he did things. Yeah. So when you read that or you heard that, because I heard it live and my mouth literally hit the ground. What was your reaction to just that comment?
I thought it was too honest, really. Yeah. I mean, like, I think that, you know, Jimbo, though, you remember, you know, on signing day, he had this press conference, and it was, he kind of responded to comments by Lane Kiffin about, you know, some loose
kind of.
Yeah, he was great today on Twitter and everything, but he responded to some loose allegations that Kiffin had kind of made in a couched way about how A&M was getting their recruiting class. And at the time, he was like, look, I mean, he basically said, I know where the bodies are buried, and if you guys want mutually assured destruction, you jump and I'll jump with you, right? And it's like, that's kind of what that, like, as soon as this press conference started and he started talking like this, it was like, oh, like, he's walking right up to the line, right? Like, I think what's key here is he didn't come out and just talk about Texas A&M and how they do things and kind of defend his program. He attacked back, and he attacked back in a much more aggressive way, truthfully, than what the initial comments aimed at A&M and his program were.
Yeah, so for me, I agree with you. The right avenue here was to talk about your program and how you do things. And you kind of got personal, and you took you're almost like, I'm curious if he knows something that we don't, like, he's like, they're going to be investigated or something. And he is already
Alabama tipping, or
A&M. A&M may get investigated, and he is going ahead and tipping the hand. Hey, I can help with another program too. You know, it just seemed really weird, and of how, like you said, how scorched earth he went today. Him saying this, though, really did kind of come across also petty.
Oh, yeah.
Like it came across very petty. And I've seen the video of what Nick said. Like, hey, you missed out on some guys, and A&M got them, and you brought up NIL, you got in the heat of the moment. And, you know, we'll talk about his apology here in a minute, but, Jimbo then admits that Saban has tried to call him in between last night's little event and then this presser, and he says, I didn't take the call, we're done. He's the greatest ever. When you have all of the advantages, it's easy. And then the one that, I mean, just I thought, again, continued to cross the line was, I don't cheat, I don't lie. If you did, my old man slapped me across the face. Maybe someone should have slapped him.
Yeah, that was a little too far, right? I think the interesting thing about all of this too is just kind of, I mean, it got really personal, right? Like,
it did.
We know there's a lot of coaches that don't like each other, but we rarely see like any of that actually come out in public view or commented on publicly. I think what's really fascinating though is like Jimbo saying, when you have all the advantages, it's easy. Well, dude, you've got, you know, you just got the greatest recruiting class of all time. Yeah, you just got the greatest recruiting class of all time onto your campus.
And after going 8-4.
Right. And I think going back over a decade now, every number one overall recruiting class for a while has gone on to win a national championship, right?
It's like 15. I think the number was like 15 years, all the way back to the Florida years with Urban. I think that's correct.
Yeah, I think that's the. So I guess point being though is like, well, you better go win a national title in the next few years, right? Because like if you're saying it's easy, and now you're also saying out the other side of your mouth like, this guy's mad because the playing field has kind of been leveled. You sort of just like put yourself into a box a little bit of really, if any A&M fans are paying attention, what I would interpret is my head coach thinks it's going to be easy to win a national title now, right?
Yep. And that's a great point. I mean, and they went 8-4 last year. You know, 2 years ago, 2020 year, you know, they were fifth, right? They were close. I don't really think that A&M team was really that great. I think they just benefited from a not great schedule that year, but that's neither here nor there. Jimbo doing this today, doing this today along with the recruiting class, I do think if he doesn't win a title in the next 2 years, like this is all fun and dramatic, you know, this is all fun, dramatic, and entertaining now. It won't be in 2 years if he doesn't have a title, because he has been very vocal about things. He's been very annoying about certain things. And then like, just to talk about the parody thing, and I agree with this sentiment. Like, this is the one thing that I walk away from, because, well, actually, I'll say this. Jimbo and Saban are on the same page because they both made comments about the NIL needing better restrictions, and I agree with that. But everything else was just argumentative. But he said parity, there's never been parity. Certain people never follow the rules. And then a reporter responded, you know, are you saying Saban broke rules? He's like, no, I'm just making a statement.
And yeah, and that's bull, right? Because like, we know he's saying that Saban broke rules, and and we all know that he has. Like, that's it's just the reality of what we're dealing with, right? It's like, you know, and I thought what was interesting is Jimbo said quite a few times, like, go talk to anybody that's worked for him. Go back to the places he's been. And really is encouraging the media openly to look into, you know, the history of Saban and recruiting and whether or not that's been between the lines. And I think, like, that – you know, we saw the Greg Sankey statement that came out later this afternoon, kind of admonishing both of them. And I think
it's kind of like Uncle Buck. When the kids are in the back seat and he's just like, hey, y'all stop. He's just like, hey, y'all stop.
And I think, like, what if you look back at Mike Slive, like the way that Slive really operated the SEC was in a way that Roy Kramer didn't, in a way that Greg Sankey isn't right now. And it was kind of a similar in some sense to, like, not to be over dramatic, but like there was a little bit of like Mafia Don type operation of people. If you're younger, or maybe you're newer to college football, in the late 90s and early 2000s, and kind of in the period leading up to Nick Saban coming out of Alabama, that program was crippled by the Albert Means investigation that was really started by Tennessee, knowing that Alabama was trying to entice a player in the Memphis area with a six-figure payment, and Phil Fulmer allegedly, and actually, yes, not even allegedly. I mean, this was proven in court. Phil Fulmer turned Bama in to the NCAA. And I mean, there was a time where Phil Fulmer wasn't going to SEC media days because he was afraid if he got on a bus that crossed over state lines into Alabama, he would be subpoenaed. This was before the Twitter era, but it would have been fabulous in this day and age. You know, Twitter would have been crazy with this type of story. I think Mike Slive and kind of the SEC commissioners and administrators that came after that said, guys, you know, we got to slow down. We have to quit kind of destroying each other, right? Like Mississippi State was on probation around that time. Ole Miss was on probation when Peyton Manning was a recruit. Like there was Auburn, you know, in the early 90s, lots and lots of schools, right? Like have gone through kind of NCAA troubles in the late 80s to early 2000s in a 15-year period for the SEC. And that destroyed the Southwest Conference a decade or two earlier. And what you're seeing right now is something we haven't seen in the league and really in college football in about 20 years, where you have division rivals that are like aiming the missiles at each other and everyone's threatening to press launch. And
go ahead. No, there's never been parity. Like, let's just be clear about that. There's never been parity. Like you go back to the 40s, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. Like there's never been parity. Like you can find a selection of 4 to 6 teams almost every decade, and you're going to see domination by those 4 to 6 teams. And it is comical to hear Saban talk about parity. I do think though, when he mentions that, he is talking about the betterment of college football, I guess, but he doesn't see the fact that he himself has broken college football in some ways. But here's the thing. This was the big part for me, where I think Jimbo, sometimes you just need to put the mic down. Whenever you do a mic drop, it's called a mic drop for a reason. I'm so sorry. Hold on.
That's okay.
Okay. That's why it's called a mic drop, because you eventually stop talking on the mic. But he screwed up, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear what you think about this. I think he screwed up mightily when earlier in his little presser, he said that, you know, we do things the right way, we do things clean, we didn't buy any players, blah blah blah. However, then he admits that Texas A&M does have an NIL collective. But he admitted also that he has no idea what they do, how they do it, and what's going on over there. How do you know you run a clean program when the NIL collective, which is solely focused on getting your players money, you admit that you don't know what they're doing and how they're doing it?
Right. You don't. And I mean, you know, he said multiple times in that press conference, because kudos to the reporters that were on hand for kind of pressing him for a clear answer on it. But it was very clear, like, he either doesn't actually know what's going on over there, so he can't speak to whether or not they're trying to entice guys to come to school there for financial gain, or he does know what's going on there and he's lying, right? But I think there was also some very specific moments where he's like, we didn't break any state laws, you know, and it's like, well,
he said that
that's a very
times.
Interesting. Yeah. Like that's a really interesting way to word things. Look, man, I mean, I talked to enough people in recruiting circles and you know, you and I are both pretty well plugged in around Georgia, and Georgia competed with Texas A&M for a lot of these kids. Right. And I've heard some of the dollar figures that were that were thrown around to get the Walter Nolans on campus and some of those guys, and they're high, you know, they're closer to $1 million than they are to 100,000 in certain cases. And, you know, I mean, Tennessee's just given a recruit, $8 million to come to school there, I believe is the number, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The quarterback in 2023.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
The numbers are incredibly high. Like I have no problem admitting, like as a Georgia fan, as a defender of college football of Georgia, there have been bagmen for many, many years.
Of course.
But because all of them are doing it, I have no problem with it. And now that these kids, I have no problem with kids getting money. Like, you know, I've been very, been very open about that. And I think I've heard you be open about this as well. Here's something that I found interesting too. Stuart Mandel tweeted this out today. NIL attorney Mike Caspino said, having worked with A&M's collective, everything Jimbo said is 100% true or correct and true. He didn't violate any bylaws if you keep the collective separate from the school. A&M and their collective are just very good at what they do.
Okay, here's my thing on that.
Please.
You don't mind me jumping.
No, 100%.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, coaches do evaluations, right? And college football coaches, if we know one thing about them, is that they are organizational control freaks. And, you know, they are dictators from the top down, and they control, in most cases, every single little process, or they delegate it in a very intentional manner to somebody that they know is going to execute it to the exact instructions that they have given. That collective is not running around out there offering one player, you know, six figures or close to seven figures or whatever the amount is over another player without somebody in the building giving them, you know, pointing them in the right directions. Okay. Yes, A&M did sign 7 5-stars, but there's, you know, Georgia is a great proof of this. I mean, they've put nearly 25% of the 3-star guys they've brought on campus over the last 5 years into the NFL, right? And it's because they do evaluations and they don't star chase. And
it's Texas not A&M just had, about money. Like,
it's it, yeah.
That I think that's the point you're making. I'm sorry if I interrupt you. Like,
No, you're good.
I think this is one of the things that I've always said about Saban and I've said about Kirby is, like, you know, yes, Bagman may be part of it, but you know what also is a part of it? The relationships that these coaches build with the parents and the development of the talent that these guys do when they get on campus. If these guys were only getting paid and were only going, you know, going to Georgia and then never, like, never amounting to anything, we could say, well, you know, he doesn't, you know, it's only because of money. But whenever you're winning games and winning titles and going to the NFL, like, it's a pretty big reason why these players are choosing to go to Georgia and Bama. It's not just, and I'll even give put Ryan Day in that, you know, at Ohio State. Like, it's not just money. It's development. No. And Jimbo, I would argue that Jimbo has, it's going to sound
underachieved.
Rough. Say again?
Underachieved.
Yes, thank you. He is underachieved, and I think he has lacked he has been quite lackluster in the development department because he's supposed to be a quarterback guru. Tell me the one quarterback that has looked awesome under his regime since Jameis Winston.
There ain't one. Yeah, there's not. And I think the other, like, it's funny you bring that up because the question that I was going to ask you here is, like, if you kind of posed this and flipped it around in a different way, I think, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, like, I think it's fair in a sense to say that what Nick Saban is really frustrated about is that we have reached a point, like, he's sitting there looking at all these kids who are taking the short money instead of the long money, so to speak. Like, A&M had a bunch of guys that were preseason first round projected NFL draft picks, but then they ran, you know, 4.8s and 4.9s and 5.1 40 times at their pro day, and some of them fell out of the NFL draft completely. And I think that when you look at that and you look at what Alabama has done, you look at what Georgia just did, most NFL players ever drafted in a single draft, 15 guys, that is really, really different than saying, hey, you know, get the money now, right? Like, Georgia and to even a greater extent, Alabama has really, like, yes, have they paid guys under the table and stuff over the years? Yes, of course they have. But at the end of the day, the reason why those guys still end up on campus is because they know this is going to lead to me signing, you know, $70 million worth of contracts in my professional career if I go to this school, instead of just pocketing a little bit of money now and maybe never making it to that next level and getting that first contract. And I think that's what you're really hearing Saban say, is all these kids are making the wrong decisions, and they're, you know, they're not understanding the long game here. And that's really what I think he's pissed off about.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And let's move to his apology today, Nick Saban's apology. And I'm going to read all these statements to you, and we can kind of break them down, because I know we both are against the clock. He said he opened up by saying, "I should have never singled anyone out. That was a mistake. I apologize for that." Because of how blunt and honest Saban can be, I actually believe him.
I do too.
I believe him when he says this. I think he got caught up in the moment around all of his boosters and fans, and he wanted, you know, he just got caught up in the moment. I think we've all done that before. Like, I know I have. Like, you know, you try to make a joke, and it may, you know, just may cross the line just a little bit, you know?
I've also wondered if he really knew he was being filmed at that event. Just the nature of it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. He did say also, I reached out. He's talking about Jim, reaching out to Jimbo and Dion. I reached out to them. I never got a response. I feel bad about it. I'm not changing my philosophy. I look at the betterment of college football. My concern is college football in general. I think a lot of us are concerned about it. People want to understand what's happening in college football, why players are transferring and getting money to do so. I wasn't saying anyone did anything illegal. That was something that was assumed. That wasn't what I meant or what I said. It's not illegal. It's the system that allows you to do it. And that's what I have a problem with.
And I think that's true, but it's also, you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak, no. Right? Like, you've said it at that point.
He, again, him coming out and apologizing, I really do think that was on a personal level. Like, because him and Jimbo have been friends for years. He worked
together. Yeah, they grew up together. 20 miles from each other in West Virginia. I mean, yeah, they go back on multiple staffs and lots of places and all of that stuff. But I mean, you know, the apology may be sincere and all that, but it's like Jimbo also sat there and said, you know, there's people that you learn to do things the right way from, like Bobby Bowden, and there's people that you learn to do the wrong things from. And there is, okay, two sides of the sword. One side is that Nick Saban's teams are so successful that his assistant coaches are in high demand. But like, there is some truth to the fact that people come in there and they learn the system and they leave very quickly. And especially over the last like 5-7 years, you know, Kirby Smart was kind of the one constant on that staff, him and Scott Cochran for a long time. But it's like, he's turning over the majority of his staff almost every offseason, right? And so to an extent, like, maybe there is an element of truth to that. He is a notoriously hard person to work for, but high achieving people are usually that way. So it's like, I'm not going to make the assumptive leap that has anything to do with.
But I would also say, and I know you're not making this claim, but like, anyone who would make that, Jimbo, I would push back on this just to say, and look, it might just be the under the table deals that everyone made. Jimbo's the only coach who I've ever heard really make these kind of claims. Like, Kirby has done nothing but been complimentary. Lane Kiffin Lane Kiffin, who does not give a crap about what anyone thinks, has been so complimentary of Nick Saban. Well,
and Jimbo was really up until, you know, this point, right? Like, he's always
until last year, whenever he said at a booster thing that he was going to kick their butt, you know?
Right. Like, but at the same time, like, you know, I think they both have always been pretty cordial in the media and credited each other for good things that happened. And, you know, I know Saban's given him credit for winning that national title at LSU and his involvement in that. So I think this is more recent beef, but I agree. Probably there's a little something more to this that's been simmering underneath that just none of us were aware of until this point.
So to finish things off, just a couple of things. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks from now, they will be in a room together at a table for the SEC coaches meeting. In God knows how long, like 60 days, they will be at SEC Media Days together.
Right.
I really do. And I think the schedule's already been made, and I think they're not going to be there at the same time on the same days, but I kind of hope the SEC changes that and make sure that they are there at the same time.
Shame, isn't it?
Yeah. I have one big question, then I have the point to end on. I want to have a question for you. Do you think this goes any bigger? Like, do you think this is going to spark investigations, or is this just going to kind of be like, hey, guys, stop that, and they just stop?
I think the public war of words is going to be over for now, unless, you know, I think it's going to take some sort of incident to spark this back up, because I think that these guys probably have gotten a tongue lashing from Greg Sankey today, and there's probably
their wives too.
Yeah, because yeah. It's a bad look for everybody, man.
They spend freaking vacations together.
They used to, yeah, for like, sure.
Their wives are probably like, you get on that phone right now and you apologize.
Well, and I think the reality of this is, like, Saban messed up by, you know, you never point the finger in public that explicitly. But at the same time, like, there's always going to be allegations of this kind of stuff. Hell, I mean, once a year, there's some radio host in Knoxville that says, like, oh, the proof is coming down of Georgia cheating. Here comes the NCAA. It never happens. But, like, Kirby Smart never responds to it, right? And so it's like, I think this got too personal for all of these guys, or for Saban and Jimbo. But I think my big takeaway from this, honestly, is Kirby Smart's been sitting here recruiting top three classes for – what, 5 years in a row now? And he hasn't gotten wrapped up into any of this drama. But B, I think what you're seeing is a threatened Nick Saban, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. that's how I view this. And I think that losing to Jimbo hurt. Yeah, he's tired. He's getting old. And it's like the system's changing. And it's like this isn't familiar to him anymore. And in many ways, his life's work is being threatened, right? And it's like Georgia came in and started recruiting like Alabama did, and you know they were really the only ones in the conference doing that. And some of the guys that Georgia just won a national title with would have played for Alabama if Kirby Smart had still been there. That 2017 class that we all look back on from a NFL draft standpoint, that's probably the best class ever with Judy and Harris and all of those guys. Like, Kirby was the guy that laid the groundwork recruiting wise for a lot of those kids, right? You know, he recruited every position at Alabama. He recruited a lot of the skill players. So he leaves, he starts doing that thing at Georgia. That kind of cuts your pool in half, right? Or cuts your ability to kind of pick who you want by a certain degree or a percentage. And then all of a sudden this rule changes. And A&M is, you know, they show up and they're the new money on the block and no one thinks they belong there. And to be fair, if you look at their history and their recent records, they don't, right? And so I think he looks at that and it's like, well, now I got to deal with this crap in my own division. And here's more players I'm not getting my hands on. And I think that, like, we maybe saw Saban at his most honest that we've ever seen him, because I think that he came off a little bit threatened, and I think that's probably correct.
No, I think that's great. And to finish this up, currently right now, in 142 days, A&M goes to Alabama, and the point line is Alabama 20.5 over A&M.
Ooh, that's a lot, man.
right now, I would not even be scared to put money on the over. Like, I just think, you know, like, this Alabama team might be the best under Saban. Like, the team coming into this year may be the best he's ever had. Maybe. I'm talking about top to bottom on offense and defense, because that defense is going to be so gross this year. Like,
and it's going to be good for sure.
I'm so excited to see the defense. Specifically, the receivers won't be anywhere close, but right. I just really like that team. There's going to be so much animosity that week of coverage. But I got to ask you this, because
sure.
I've got a lot of friends who have texted me over the last couple weeks and You and I have talked about this, you know, in our DMs together.
Yeah.
Is Arch, what do you, where are you at with Arch right now?
So I think that, I think one thing to remember when people like the Arch Manning coverage is the kid's basically never given an interview. So anyone that's sitting there saying like they know doesn't, right? Like,
yes.
There's a lot of recruitments where a guy that works for a national pay site is going to have a better knowledge on. This isn't one of them. They have the least access to this than any high profile recruitment we've seen in the modern era. Right. I think that Georgia, I know that Georgia feels really good about where they're at. There's a reason they're not pursuing any other 2023 quarterbacks. I think Texas also feels good about where they're at. I think it's going to come down to those two. But I think that like I've talked to some people who are very plugged into what's going on with that situation who, you know, really believe like Brian Kelly has come in and made a very good impression on the kid and LSU might be sitting there in that kind of second slot right now ahead of Texas and right behind Georgia. I think if his recruitment ended today, he would go to Georgia. I think, you know, at one point it seemed like he was going to commit the summer before his senior year. Now it's sounding more and more like he's going to play his senior year of football and kind of watch what happens this year.
Mm-hmm.
If Texas has that magical year, maybe they go into Tuscaloosa and they're able to pull one out. I don't think it's going to happen, but let's say it did, then maybe that kind of puts them over the edge. But I think right now Georgia's been kind of the most consistent and sits in the best spot. And I think the relationships there, I think Arch has a phenomenal relationship with Steve Sarkisian. I think Arch has phenomenal relationships with about three or four different guys on Georgia's staff. And if he does land in Athens, Buster Faulkner is going to be a name that a lot of people hear and talk about and know for a time going forward, and you know, will become a big name in college football recruiting circles because I think he will have been as instrumental to landing him as anyone.
No, I completely agree. I've said for 2 years that I really did think Texas was the team to beat when it came to this recruitment. I still think Texas is a heavy player. However, I think Quentin Ewers transferring in and one of the other quarterbacks they got coming in this past year, this class currently, yeah. I think has helped Georgia in that regard. And also watching the spring game for Georgia has probably helped too.
Yep.
That's a whole other conversation to be had. I'm nervous about our quarterback's position right now. But I do think Arch, like, I agree with you. If it ended today, I would say Georgia. However, the longer this prolongs, probably the less and less confident I may feel in that. And
yeah, I agree.
But we'll see. But Graham, I don't want to hold us up any longer, man. We said we were 30 minutes and we went a little bit over.
All good.
Any last comments about anything?
Yeah, I think I said this on Twitter, but and we kind of alluded to it earlier, but it's like if I was a 17-year-old kid and I wanted to get developed and go to the NFL and not have to deal with a bunch of drama or kind of secondhand accusations being thrown at my family, Georgia would be looking pretty good right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. For me, it goes back to we've never seen Saban be so flippant. We've seen Jimbo kind of be petty. I mean, I meant to mention this earlier, but it is hilarious to me that he brought up Bobby Bowden, and he was part of the group that got Bobby Bowden out. So I find yeah. that ironic. Anyway,
well, hey, I mean, how about calling your own press conference to call someone else a narcissist?
Yeah, I mean, they're all narcissists. They all have to be. They all have to be egotistical. Every coach does. Graham, thank you again, man. His Twitter handle is at DogOutWest on Twitter. Mine is at SpiderDude64. Thank you guys so much for listening to us. We really do appreciate the downloads. If you will share. Oh my gosh, like, rate, review, and subscribe. Something like that. One of those things.
There you go.
Go do all the podcast things. Thank you so much for listening. Two guys, one love, and that is college football. Catch you on the flip flop. Later.